Today is Sunday, January 15th, 2023. Shavua Tov Mubarak to everyone listening. I just want to mention, everyone's asking me about the Brit. Thank you for your Mazel Tovs. The Brit was on Tuesday, and it was L'Kavod L'Tiferet. The name of the baby, my new great-grandson, is Ariel Amichai. And I had a lot of nachat at the Brit, because both my granddaughter-in-law and grandson spoke, and I have to admit they're greater religious Zionists than I am. I was just inspired. And, you know, my grandson is one thing, and here's a lady who came in Aliyah 10 years ago alone from Baltimore, Kala Kavod. On a sadder note, I want to dedicate today's shiur in memory of the greatest lady I ever knew, Isha Gedolah, in the full sense of the word, Mrs. Ilse Bentheim. She was Zoche L'Arichat Yomim Tovim, and was in her 100th year, 99 and a half. And I knew her quite well. And this lady, I'll tell you, was a Talmidah Chachama, first rate, and was not a feminist, if you follow what I'm saying. That's exactly what my dream is, that women will become Talmidot Chachamot, Jireyot V'Shleimot, but not a feminist. She knew what the halacha was and lived accordingly. The family is one of a kind, she and her husband Charlie, and again, these were people I interacted with since the 1960s. When Philip was my student in YU. And she and Charlie raised a wonderful family, all the children. Shomrei Torah Mitzvot, raised at a time when it's not as easy as today, I would say, to raise children and to be mekabel shema kablum aleihem ol malchut shemayim in the full sense of the word. On a personal level, Ilse read my entire manuscript on the Rub. I thank her in the introduction of Volume 1. And I have to tell you, she made corrections, taught me English. I still recall the difference between immigrating and emigrating. It's Ilse Bentheim who taught me the difference between them. And there's one beautiful family story that I've told. I want to retell it. I don't know how many people remember it. But when their eldest daughter, who died a number of years ago, Bi Zichrono Livracha, who I also knew quite well, married to my chaver and my classmate, Harris Gedalia, should live and be well. At their wedding, another friend of mine was invited, and New York is New York. He was going to go home from the wedding, and he had some suitcases in his trunk. And lo and behold, he comes down after the wedding in Manhattan, and his car is broken into, the trunks are gone. You should know that after the Sheva Brachas, when the Bentheims found out about it, they got in touch with him, and they said what was stolen, how much was it, etc. And he gets a check from the Bentheim family for what was missing. It was a few hundred dollars, as I recall. It was a hefty sum at that time. And he asked, why? They said to him, we don't want you to have a bad taste when you think back at the wedding of our eldest daughter. And that's a classic Bentheim story. There are more that I know. And I can tell you, Yerayim Bishleimim, and she was one of a kind. And I recall her memory fondly, fondly, with awe and love, Ilse Bentheim, Zichrono Livracha. Okay, so today Shein is on our memory. I want to say something about the contemporary situation. I said it this morning in shul, and I saw it was accepted with good feeling. They're demonstrating. Alan Dershowitz has gotten involved. V'yakrich zecharayim v'esich nisht. He lives in America. We live here. And with all due respects, he's not the genius of the generation of the Tzadik Hador. And everyone, you read the post on what's going on, we want to get rid of the justices and the system of law. First of all, there was a beautiful article in Makor Rishon that compared all the Western states, how they select their judges, Supreme Court judges. The only country in the world where the politicians play no role, and it's basically judges pick judges, what we say in Hebrew, chaver mevi chaver, is Israel. It's unbelievable. But you have to understand something much more basic. In life, there's a lot of subjectivity involved in law, in halakha. It's not just black and white. Let's talk about my courses in Bernard Revel over the last, since 78, it's 45 years already. Take Kosher Mishpat. Kosher Mishpat is, in, I would say, 90% based upon Pshara. Gemara in Sanhedrin. I've sat in Bat Dinim, and right away in Chosha Mishpat, I remember Rav Tait scaring the people. Do you want the letter of the law, or do you want a compromise which you can live with amicably? And time and again, Dinah de Malchut to Dinah, and there's so much subjectivity. Take Ebenezer, Mamzerut, Aguna, Mishum, Iguna, he killed a Barabbanon. It's unbelievable how much subjectivity there is in these two areas when you compare it to many of the halachot that we simply say it doesn't apply here because Igun and Mamzerut is involved. Take Yoredeya, those of you that are learning Yoredeya, Hepsid Meruba, Erev Shabbos, Orchim, there's so many subjective factors. It's exactly the same thing when it comes to general law. The thinking of the judge plays a big role. There's sociological factors, economic factors, political factors. I'll give you a simple example. What's going to come up shortly, and again, as I've said all along, you get your entertainment for your taxes paid here. It's going to come up very shortly. The draft, yeshiva boys are exempt. Now, I can tell you, yeshiva boys exempt from the draft is 100% against the halacha. Api halacha, this is a mulchemet mitzvah, afilu achatan v'kala have to go out. What they have to do, it could be they just involved in logistics, they have to be in supply lines, they're not at the front, could be. But they too have to be drafted. Whoever heard, Reb Arnstein wrote a whole article, appeared in Tradition. Any kid growing up in Los Angeles or Rio de Janeiro or Moscow who's Jewish has an obligation to join the army and help save the Jewish people. That's from a halachic standpoint. From a democratic standpoint, how can you exempt yeshiva boys? That's like saying, if you're a Shomer Shabbos, you don't have to pay taxes. Your neighbor, who lo aleinu, is not yet understands why he's a Jew, he pays taxes, and the kid who is Shomer, who's a Shomer mitzvah, his family is exempt. I mean, this is totally against any democratic logic. Now, this is going to come before the Supreme Court. If the Supreme Court paskins, there are from people in the Supreme Court, and they'll say, oh, P'alach, every kid has to save. Those who believe in democracy more than Judaism, I'll be democracy, every kid has to serve. You'll have civil war in the country, you'll accomplish nothing. You won't have enough jails to jail all the yeshiva students whose rabbeim will tell them better to rot away in jail than to serve in the IDF. So you see, when you make a decision like that, you have to be involved with a lot of subjectivity. And all right, if I were in the Supreme Court, I would work out a system where every year a little bit more Haredim have to come, have to serve. And then what happens ultimately, the more that serve, the more that integrate, the more that become officers, the army becomes a lot less frightening for a Haredi Jew when he sees his commander is going to have payas and a beard and tzitzit sticking out. Baruch Hashem. And we're Zeicha, by the way, tomorrow the new chief of staff is appointed. It's the first time in the history of Israel that the chief of staff is a total Shem B'Torah mitzvah. He doesn't wear a kippah, which is unfortunate. He should grow up, in my humble opinion. I can say what I want. I'm 85 years of age. I came to Israel 53 years ago. Many from Jews did not wear a kippah. There are reasons why. This one said he came from Morocco, he came from Germany. Really, what was involved, you couldn't get ahead because the Mapai controlled the country. That is over. Baruch Hashem. Time to wear a kippah and show we are a Jewish state with belief in God and the Ribbono Shel Olam. But there's no question that the subjective factors play a role. I can tell you a cute story. There was a Haver Knesset, a few can see other go. He grew up in Baltimore, studied in Israel, and he became a religious Zionist. And he visits America, he was in Teaneck, and my Talmud was sitting near him, and he spoke, and every yeshiva boy should be drafted. And my Talmud said to him, but what will you do? They're not going to go. What, are you going to arrest them? Absolutely. You're going to put them in jail? Absolutely. Do you have enough jails? We'll build more jails, he said. All right, I don't think that's a practical or a logical solution. Yes, we believe in all our heart and soul this is a Jewish state which is also democratic. I've spoken about it many times. I don't have to explain my point of view. Judaism always takes precedence when the two conflict, but a person's personal feeling plays a big role in how he's going to paskin a shaila or give a decision in the Supreme Court. And if every in America, how do they select? I mean, my grandchildren don't know this. Who selects? The president, the Senate? Who else has a role? What did Roosevelt do? He loaded the court. Remember, increased the number of Supreme Court justices, put in his people, and we all benefit from it today. Social Security, Bituach Lumi in Israel. Where did it begin? It began with Roosevelt back in the early 30s. And Ribbono Shel Olam, so Israel wants to have a system where justices and politicians and lay people will have a role in selecting judges. I don't see anything better than that. Kol hakavod. All right. Then, now back to learning. I actually saw this on my own, and the Talmud called it to my attention, but it's very fascinating. I'm citing from one of the Alonim, and as I told you more than once, these freebies are unbelievable. You have a world in here that opens a world of thought to you. And this is from the 7th of January, 2023, Shabbaton. And there's an article on women who can't get a get, which is a terrible problem, men who hold up women. And in the state of Israel, at least they can throw you into jail, they can throw you into solitary confinement. We do have a good percentage rate of getting gitten. But what do you do if this man is refusing to give a get and the lady is growing old? And here's the problem of a lady's time when she can be impregnated is limited. It's not unlimited. A man can fire a the Chafetz Chaim and the Netziv both had children when they were over 70. But their wives were much younger. A woman is limited. So there's a whole article here that they've come up with a solution, artificial insemination donor. And this takes us to the whole problem of AID. I've lectured on it for over a year. It's Harakafet Aaron Chelik Gimel. A good deal of the volume is devoted to this topic. So many tshuvot have been written. And it's a fascinating question. Halacha l'maisa, we've had a consensus today that there's no mamzeret involved when there's no illicit sexual act. The problem is not so much mamzeret, but how do you go and you have a donor, You don't know how many children this donor has become the father of. And I can tell you from my own experience, there was, I don't want to mention name obviously, but a very prominent individual who I was very close to, and he was a Baal Tshuva. And he told me when he was in medical school, he supported himself by donating sperms. So you have a boy and a girl attracted to each other, and little do they know that they are half brother and half sister from the same father. And that's one side of the problem. So you'll say, well, you don't do AID in Israel, you go to Germany. In Germany there's a hospital which just devoted to AID, and I know people who went there, including a student of mine, at least one student, could be more. And here you're impregnated with the sperms of a non-Jew. This is Reb Moshe's tshuva, right? Rov are not Jewish. Am I right, Mark? That's Reb Moshe's tshuva. And there's no, all right, there's no mamzeret involved for sure. There's no sexual act involved. But on the other hand, look what it's like bringing the seed of Amalek, and we'll see that either later today or next week, by the way, into a woman, into a child. And this raises the whole question, anyone who took a course in anthropology, etc., nurture versus nature. N-U-R versus N-A. Nurture versus nature. It's not a simple question. If you are familiar with Rakefet's work on the Rav, I quote the Rav where he had a shayla in this area, and he said, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to paskin. And the people who called, he said, let me think it over, I'll get back to you. Remember? And then he suffered with the shayla. But halacha l'maisa, I have to say, if the lady is brave enough, with all the difficulty involved, it certainly is a threat to these men who want to ruin their ex-wives, the hatred. And this is part of life. Humans are humans. I just dealt with a shayla this morning from the States. Humans create problems. And here, if the marriage doesn't work out, you have to cut it. The Torah allows gittin. If I had my way, if I would have told Ribbono Shel Olam, don't allow gittin, the children suffer. Have a rule, if their children evolve, no get. Children, no get. But all right, God is a lot smarter than yours truly. And there are gittin, but if he refuses to give a get, this could very well be a good threat. It's fascinating. I wouldn't rule it out. And it may help certain women who are desperate, and I've lived with this, and I've seen it, and I know women. But it's not simple. The one case that I'm very close to is a wonderful student of mine, going back to the 70s. I taught such wonderful women. The Israeli division of Michlala, many of them are world famous today in their fields. And this lady says, I don't know if I did the right thing, it's years later, and she suffers because when she came back with the child and I gave her a mazel tov, she started to cry. She said, every other Rebbe of mine tells me off and wants to spit in my face, and you give me a mazel tov. She was crying. I said, look, you did it. I don't know if you did the right thing, the wrong thing, but Yesham Mila Smoch, they may kill him here. And if you did it already, a big mazel tov. But she says she suffers. There's no husband. There's no husband. By the way, the problem of this lady is she's nice looking and bright. She lived in two worlds. And this is something I've always warned people who come in Aliyah. If you it's very hard. Children growing up here, half American, half Israeli. You have to live in one world. It's very hard to find the shidduch if you're Chatzi Yevet and Chatzi Ben Chorin. And this lady suffered. She grew up in Matastov, but she really was half YU in personality and understanding and outlook. And this is one of the problems of Aliyah. That's why better to come when the kids are young and they can totally integrate, or after the kids are older and out of college, when they're never going to be Israelis of American origins, But Americans who are living in Israel very happily, and there's a difference. You go to Beit Shemesh, as I've said more than once, the only city in Chutz Laretz that observes one day Yantif. Okay, now back here. And today's shiur is very fascinating. We're dealing with the whole question. You see, the tshuva, it's hard to understand the questions he's asked. But after going through the whole tshuva, I conclude he was asked two questions. One about a woman who is not able to conceive. Can she get medical help? And he describes the situation. By the way, this is Mishnah Halachat Chelek Tet Zayin Siman Kuf Yud. And he describes the situation, and it's a situation that we've come across in the response to literature. But by the way, it's a situation which to a certain degree we have solved halachically today. It's what I mentioned a few minutes ago. A-I-H, not A-I-D. In other words, here you're dealing with the case where the husband has sperms that are strong enough to create a child, the woman has eggs, no problem, but there's the way God created her, as she came out of the womb, the uterus is not perfect, it's curved, and the sperms can't meet the wall of the uterus, the sperms can't meet the eggs. So today there is a solution, artificial insemination husband. And there no posek, unless very extreme, I don't know, no posek in the world will say it's not permitted. It's permitted lachatchila. And for instance, Machon Pua and Shari Tzedek, Laniato, they specialize in this. And I once was shown the various instruments they use. It's very interesting. It's like when you get an injection, you see a straight needle. Here, they have curves. Depending upon what they need, the instrument is curved to fit in to whatever deformity. When I say deformity, I mean on a general understanding of the way normal, what we call normative. And it's fascinating what they're able to do. But the one question is she allowed to undergo treatment, to have an operation? In other words, there's nothing wrong with her. She's not sick, but she is an akara. That's one question. The other question is orthodontia and buck teeth. And are you allowed to do orthodontia? Not allowed. Does the father have to pay for orthodontia for a boy? And we'll come to that. For a girl, you'll see what the Reb Menashe Klein Paskins, I would say, what I said about the Supreme Court, there's a lot of subjectivity in what he's writing. I, for one, don't agree, and I'm sure most people listening today would not agree with his psak, but we'll come to it. Now, what he quotes, and I ended off the shiur last week, and this is a fascinating halacha, Yoredeya, Siman Shin Lamed Vav and Sif Aleph and Sif Bet. And what you have here, not in the Torah Rishut L'Ropa L'Rapot U'Mitzvahi U'Beklal Pikuach Nefesh U'V'Yimmo Ne'atzmo Harei Zeh Shofech Damim. And in these few words, you have a world of thought. I would say, I wouldn't be surprised if 100,000 pages or more were written on these very words. First of all, why should someone want to be a doctor? Everything we do in life, we can make mistakes. I always tell the story of my brother. My brother is a Talmud of Reb David Lifshitz. So, a younger brother. So Reb David would always encourage him to be like his older brother, going to learning, rabbanit, all right, I wound up a Rosh Yeshiva, got a Rosh Kaila, whatever you want to call me, I just say I'm just a Mabitz Tairich, bin a Malamit. But be like your older brother. If And my brother was chavruta with Rav Hashir Heshi Shechta. My brother was chavruta for many years. They knew each other from the Savanta, MTA, Yeshiva College. And we lived near each other, and there was one big chabura, Kanayin Hara. A lot of good came out of that chabura. Now, Vayehi Hayom, and my brother tells Reb David he's going to medical school. And my brother never finished college. No one believes the story, but they check it out. They say, hey, you're right. In the early years, Albert Einstein wanted to attract good students. It was a new medical school. So I don't know who gave them the idea, Yiddish Cup. They announced anyone who has 3 years of college and has an average, you know, a high average, whatever it was, and we will accept into medical school. So they wound up getting the brightest kids from all many different universities, but particularly Yeshiva College. So you become a doctor without a bachelor's. And he tells Reb David, and Reb David says to him, very seriously, you know, Reb David says, all right, he says, one thing I want to tell you, he used to speak Hebrew, Reb David, when you're studying medicine, be very careful to study everything and to know, because it's not like when you study Shas and Paiskim. You make a mistake, no? Aneinu ben yoyma, it becomes a ben yoyma, ben yoyma, aneinu ben yoyma. It's not the end of the world. No one's going to die from eating something cooked in a pan that was a ben yoyma. And it had the meat in it, and you put in milk, whatever. All right, you know. We try not to make mistakes when we paskin, but never. But a doctor who makes a mistake, oh boy, this is serious. The results can be serious. And as you know, malpractice today is, if lawyers who specialize in malpractice don't walk away poor people. So a person will say, why should I be a doctor? Why should I take the risks? And here, this is halacha lemaisa, the Torah gave reshut for doctors to heal. It's a mitzvah. And even if you're a human being, you're not going to be perfect. But you have to do the best you can. Look into the Shach, and the Shach says it, Shelo yomar, ma li letzah hazeh, shema et'ah, v'nimtzati horeg b'shogeg. And he says, this, you know, a person's a human being. I can wind up killing someone. I can make a terrible mistake. No, do the best you can. God can't require more out of you. And the afilu yeshlo misha yapenu shalomin hakol adam soche lehit rapot. And also it's a very important concept. A doctor may say, why me? There are other doctors. Let other people be medical doctors. But you see, sometimes it's the schut of this person. He's the doctor, and God smiles upon him. He made the right decision, the right choice. Do it. Don't depend on others. And this is, in life, critical. Chazal say, Tov sheberofim legehenim. And that's a pretty sharp statement. And many people try to explain that. I think, I heard this from a doctor, but I think that he's absolutely right. Tov sheberofim, if a doctor thinks he's the best and he knows everything, he's in Gehenim. A wise doctor, consult, open up textbooks, check, al dat atzmacha al tesmoch, colleagues. And I have to say, the Israeli situation, or the Israeli system in the hospitals, they work as a team. They discuss difficult cases, and they'll take a vote on it. I saw that in my own family. I remember when they called me in and told us that they decided not to operate on my father, but I was impressed that it wasn't an individual doctor. It was done with a consensus of the experts. And I have to give all the credit. You can say what you want. Everyone finds problems in Israel. I can tell you my mother went into the hospital. She was 98 years old. They treated her as if she was 18. They did everything possible to help. And it's not like Canada, when if you're over 80, they don't even look at you. You've lived long enough. One doctor said to a father of a student of mine, "You've lived long enough, prepare yourself to die." All right, this is terrible. Now, if you look into the rest of the halacha, it's very fascinating, and we're going to come back to this again. And who has the right? Who has the right to be a doctor? And the halacha says, you have to be studied, you have to be knowledgeable. Lo yitasek refuah l'imkein hu baki, and you have to have reshut beit din. Now, what does reshut beit din mean? I'd hate to think that our doctors today have to have reshut beit din. With all due respect, I have students who are dayanim, but they're not medical doctors. They don't know medicine. I know some of the Gedolei Yisrael here, Rav Yosef, Rav Lau, I don't believe they have medical knowledge. The Rav, who I knew quite well, I'd say intimately, the Rav never pretended to be a medical doctor, Lehefech, okay. But I'll tell you what the Reshut Beit Din, in modern terminology, it means he has to be licensed. In other words, a country that's on a level, a Western country, you just can't be a witch doctor. That has to be a system of licensing. And that's Israel. That's America. I know here many doctors not only qualify in Israel, they qualify in America too. They say sometimes when they're traveling, whatever the reasons are, it's good to have qualification. They take the exams. I know my grandchildren took exams after they finished everything here in Israel in the Technion, where they went to medical school. They have the exams for the American license as well. It could be once you have an American license and an Israeli license, you'll be accepted anywhere in the country. I can only tell you about my brother, who we came in 69, my brother's family came in 73, right before the Yom Kippur War. And he already was called up in the Yom Kippur War. Now, he didn't have a license yet here, but they gave him a temporary license. He was involved. They needed every doctor possible to work in their fields of specialty. And kol hakavod to him that he was already practicing without the complete license here, but the government, the army, but that's Bereshut. There's an organization. They know what's going on. Now, we'll come back to that. You'll see, but not yet. Quote something later in the Tshuva where this halacha comes to life and gets us involved in a very interesting contemporary religious problem. To be honest with you, it's a problem I just sent an email this morning giving my opinion on it, but let that rest till later. All right, now, so this question of doing an operation that's not serious, that there's not danger to life, all right, so the question is, do you get involved? Because every operation, there can be a mishap. So with orthodontia, he says, I don't see any problem with orthodontia. Nothing can go wrong. Nothing can be a mishap. Either the teeth straighten out properly or they still have a little space between them. So that's not even a question. The question later will be man and woman, but we'll come to that later. All right, now with the akara. Is that an illness? Should she feel bad about it? Should she worry? Should she get involved, take an operation? And here, we don't have to go any further than the Chumash. Bereshit, one of the underlying themes is infertility. I don't have to tell you, it appears with Sari Menu, with Rivka, with Rachel, and it absolutely has to be treated as a, I would use the word, it's a mental, psychological, I wouldn't use the word illness, but an ill feeling. Follow? That's the word I would use. A woman, the desire to be a mother is the secret of our existence. This is our big fear that we have today with women achieving everything a man can achieve. This is the whole problem in Israel, I understand, in America as well. So many people are single. Where will the Jewish children come from? This is our problem with feminism. Where do you draw the line? Someone, my wife showed me, some lady just spoke, not a Jewish person. I don't know what the context was, but she said, Wes, we have sexual problems that we have to deal with and educate. But if we didn't have these sexual problems, none of us would be here today. And I understand what she was saying. Sex is here, thank God, it's here to stay. If that attraction, those hormones, that mystical feeling wouldn't be here. It's the Gemara in Yoma, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, chicken wouldn't lay eggs. Okay. Then there's more. It's not just the innate desire in the woman, motherhood. Marriage. Man is chayev in pru revu. A lot of machshava, a lot of philosophy has been written. Why aren't women? Why don't we obligate women? And the most basic answer is that women naturally want to have a child, want to hold a child, want to show love. Men, if you wouldn't obligate them, pru revu, a man would say, why do I need children? A waste of money. I told you more than once, Elliot, figure out how much you have spent on your children. Tonight, hurry, you could live in a castle if you didn't have children. What kind of life would that be? But we have to command a man, a woman. And I told you, with this lady who just had, had many great grandchildren. But she's very special. I have to tell you, I'm so moved. But when her first child was born, her eldest, and I remember she was holding Eyal in her hands. And here's a lady who's a Barnard graduate getting a PhD. She has a PhD now from Hebrew U, biochemistry, in research today at Weizmann Institute. And she was holding the firstborn child in her hands and said to me, Saba, this is my greatest achievement. I told you, I blessed her. I said, you don't know how happy you made me that you can be learned and capable and accomplished. And you remain a woman. Thank God this is your greatest achievement. And I see my wife, Baruch Hashem, is no youngster, but when she picks up a great grandchild and she was holding the baby at the Brit, I could see her face was aglow. I hold the baby, I'm thinking, boy, you better be a big Talmud Chacham and a big Lamdan, and you better out there in the world in grade A and I don't know, army and tanks and all that goes with it, and PhDs, and there's a world for you. But when a woman holds a baby, it's natural love. This is a baby. I remember the Rav, I can't forget it, it breaks my heart to quote it. It was at one of the, it probably was a yahrzeit rosh, it was in public, and the Rav, as brisk as he was, as private as he was, he could let his hair down. The Israelis had a lot of trouble when they would see intimate moments revealed. Israel at that time could be even today. They're Rabbanim like angels. They're not normal human beings. They don't have normal emotion. And the Rav would let his hair down with emotion. And I remember he's describing his firstborn grandson, Reb Moshe. I cry. He was later killed by Arab terrorist in Hanov, Moshe Tweskin, Zeichet Tzadik B'Kados Levracha. And the Rav says, and my daughter was holding him, and she said to me, this is mine, this is mine, this is mine. And the Rav, they spoke Yiddish to each other, and the Rav said, I didn't want to hurt her feelings. It's not just hers. The Ribbono Shel Olam has a big share. You follow Shlosha Shvutim Tofim V'Yadam. But that is a woman. And here, the very fascinating, Reb Menashe Klein quotes the Ramban, Nachmanides, Chayrish and Torah. I'm quoting from Shmot Chaf Gimel, Pasuk Chaf Hei. Va'avadatem et Hashem Elokeichem uveirachech lachmecha v'yet mimecha v'hasiroti machlami kibecha lo tiyeh mashakela v'akara v'atsecha et mispa yomecha amalei. And very fascinating, look into the Ramban and look into the Ibn Ezra. I have to tell you, it's like medicine, that food and drink, what we take into the body, is crucial to our health. And even when it comes to infertility, food and drink play a role. And I have to tell you, this is what's going on in Israel. The sugar, the tax, what do we have, a fire alarm again? Was that outside? No, it's in, Yoma, what is that?
That's a false alarm.
False alarm, okay.
99.99%.
99.90%. Yomo says it's a false alarm. The Rebbe says when Yomo speaks, listen. Now, what's going on with the sugar? Here with the drinks, they put a tax on the drinks. What's wrong with sugar? So many experts spoke out. Sugar, diabetes, every heart problem in the world, everything, the food you eat. Okay, halacha lemaisa, I say take the tax off, because that's not the way to educate. People are going to buy drinks even if it costs another 25%. The way to educate is, all right, don't buy the sugar drinks. And I have a problem why they tax the non-sugar drinks. I always buy zero, Coke Zero. Why do I have to pay more? It's no sugar. All right, then you wind up, a very famous doctor, Dobbins, and my grandfather-in-law, my son-in-law's shul. So every Friday night I daven there if it's not raining. And if not, I daven closer to home. And this doctor has told me more than once, these artificial sweeteners are worse than sugar. You can't win. Red meat. No, how much red meat do you eat? God, when I was in BMT, and I worried about BMT. There's no meat here in Israel. We suffer. And you grow older. Red meat. The biggest enemy in the world. Mark right or wrong, I don't have to tell you. And this Ramban and this Ibn Ezra, they're right up to date. Look into the Ibn Ezra. Sheyeheyam alchim v'amashkim tovim b'riyim v'lo yolidu machla aval yepo'umi mena. And wow, and then he goes on that with women, ki bechem yimsa shechol v'ha'ikur. Now, that too is very interesting. Gentlemen, you are visitors or you study here?
Visitors.
Okay. So it's chad pami. Or, the computer's limited space. Ploni almoni, or I have to learn your names?
You learned my name last year. I was here visiting. You don't read.
Wait, so one second. What's your name?
Yehuda Dovrit.
Yehuda Dovrit, you said?
Reese.
Oh, Yehuda Reese. Okay. Yeah, your father's book, I love. That's the world. That's the real McCoy. And who's the gentleman with you?
Yosef Chaim,
that's my grandson putting out the book on tanks, if you heard my shiurim. Okay. Do you know about tanks?
A little bit.
Did you do army?
I did not.
Are you a Jew or not a Jew? How could you not have done army? It's a Muhammad mitzvah.
Right.
Did you see the... I never saw anyone exempt from Chicago from the army. Wow. All right, you'll get there. I can see they know my sense of humor, so they're not getting offended. Okay, anyway, back here. Welcome. Gentlemen, there's no two ways about it that the food we eat determines our body, our health, and that's what they say, that this whole curse in the Torah is one of the main results of the food not being proper is women are incapable of becoming pregnant. Now, the Ibn Ezra is interesting because he says, why does the Torah talk about women? Lo tiyema shakelavi akara. Why not about men? If the food is not proper, it has to affect men too. But the Ibn Ezra says that ikur, the inability to create pregnancy or to become pregnant, is more prevalent in women than men. Mark, I don't know. We need a medical doctor who does research to tell us, but it's interesting. I think it's correct. In my lifetime of experience, and I have had a lot of experience, I have had students who were infertile, couldn't create a pregnancy, but it's very, very rare. Women, you find more problems. But from the Torah, if this is the blessing that we just quoted from Shmot, then we see that infertility is absolutely an infirmary. Hinei v'vadi akavi akara ish o isha tarvayhu malahu beguf. And absolutely a woman should do the operation. And then he goes a step further. And here too, this is so basic. The Etziv told the Bonim, and what does it mean? And why do we say Shalo Asani Isha? Tell me, in Chicago, you have wise guys who question the bracha? So, yes or no?
Not as often.
I know rabbis, friends of mine, that when Chovevei Torah started carrying on, they say the bracha quietly, not to offend women. You idiots! When you can give birth, then you'll tell me a problem with Shalo Asani Isha. As long as you can't give birth, how dare you not say the bracha b'shem v'malchut loud and clear. Got it? Okay. Now, this the Mishnah Torah here, the Mishnah Halacha, he raises the whole issue. What is the whole question? Should a woman get involved in doing an operation? You have to hear what I've said before, what we're talking about, okay, what type of operation. But maybe something will go wrong. Why should she bring herself to tzar, to sakana? And here Rabbi Nasha Klein says, the whole concept of children, of birth, of pregnancy, is tzar, the sakana. And I have to tell you, it's etziv toldi bonim, and it's physical, it's also psychological. Anyone who's been through life, the problems you have, depression after a woman gives birth. I know cases like this where destroyed marriages, depression, the sakana, the birth. I can tell you, again, I've been asked the question, and I guess when you live long enough, you can become an expert in what went on. 80 years ago, when I went to elementary yeshiva, Solanta, I would have kids, friends, and their mothers were not their mothers, it was their aunts. Death and childbirth, do you say it every Friday night in Minhag Ashkenaz, Eila Matlikin, Eila Eima, the whole perek from Shabbos that you read before Mariv, when the Chassidim say Kegavna, right or wrong, from the Zohar. Yosef Chaim, you understand one word of Kegavna? I'll give you a nickel if you can explain it to me. Okay. But we got to get there. We got to get the nickel, or we got to get the explanation. All right. Ah, Yehuda. Yehuda, the whole birth is tzar, is pain. And yet, women, and he quotes Leah, Breshit, Lamed, Pasuk Aleph, Havali Banim, V'imlav Meta Anochi. Excuse me? What are you saying?
Wasn't it Rachel who said it?
Well, what did I say? Rachel. I said, didn't say Rachel? Thank you for correcting me. If I said Leah? No, Rachel said it, absolutely. Rachel said to Yaakov, all right, it's like the Rav made mistakes, Lula Betrek. Thank you for correcting. If I don't have children, I'm dead. And Chazal already says, someone who doesn't have children, someone who's poor, they're like dead. Ein lecha machle yoter gedolim mizu. And if this is the case, absolutely she has to go and have the operation, and the doctor has to do it. And this is what Lerapot is about, even if it may have side effects. But the goal and the chances of success, that is more important than any side effects. And you talk about the pain and the travail, the Etzev told the Bunim. Here, he quotes also. Take a look when Rivka is pregnant. And what would happen? She had twins. She walked past the synagogue, knew, Beis Medrash. Yaakov would want to go out. She walked past Aved Zara. Esav would want to go out. And she goes to consult afterwards. Lama Litsa, why do I suffer like this? Why do I have to go through this? But you see, the whole pregnancy involves Eitzev and Tzar. And a normal, healthy woman desires, as my granddaughter-in-law said to me, Saba, this is my greatest achievement. By the way, you see today, models, movie stars, lo aleinu, you know what they do? They want to have children, but they don't want to be disfigured. They don't want to go through the travail. So they have a surrogate mother. I've read about it more than once. And you see what they're trying to accomplish. But a real Jewish woman, we have to accept the totality of the experience. Very powerful. Now, Rabbi Asher Klein, he understands life, their subjectivity, but it's fascinating. How do we know we can cure a woman? And he quotes here, this is a very important sugya. with a lot of halachic implications that Rabbi Reese Sr. has to deal with quite often. By the way, we have another Chicagoan here, Rabbi Dr. Lieutenant Colonel Mark Wiener. Tell me, how come when he was my Talmud 50 years ago, he was just plain Mark, and now I have to break my teeth when I refer to him? Okay, the Gemara in Yevamot, Daf Samechei Amir Aleph. Okay. Tell me, a woman gets married once. She has no children. Gets married twice. She has no children. So the Gemara says, Lishlishi lo tinaseh ela lemi sheyesh lo banim. Third time around. I mean, you understand, this is a delicate question. You are familiar with it, with a katlanit, something you learn about when you're young, and it comes up in life. What does it mean, a katlanit? A woman marries, her husband drops dead. I'm using strong language on purpose. She marries again, the husband drops dead. Ooh, you don't want to marry her a third time? A katlanit. Now, how many times have you seen a woman marry for the third time? Elliot? Many times. So I'll tell you what the heter is based upon. Do you know or you don't know? It's very simple. The rabbi will say, how did your first husband die? A heart attack. All right. He died of a heart attack. It's not that you killed him. How did your second husband die? All right. Cancer. Lower limb. Died of an illness. But I want to tell you, Yehuda, I'm not so happy with this. I'll tell you why. If she's a shrew and ate his heart out, that's what caused the heart attack. Could be it caused the cancer. Understand? It's a lopa shit. But all right, I want the world. Don't take me lahalacha because I don't want to destroy the world. If I had to check out Yosef Chaim, I would check out, did they get along properly? Did she treat him with decency? Women can find fault. My wife is always after me. There's dirt here and dirt there. And I would say, well, the great-grandchildren were just in the house. But when no one was in the house in the last 48 hours, she says, now you can't blame it on anyone. Do you follow? But Mark, I have been married to that halavai, could be married to her for a million years. I have a wonderful wife. So I take it with a grain of salt. I have talmidim, Rebbe, my wife is always criticizing me. And I say, all right, go for marriage counseling. I don't have time to get involved on that level. But you have to know, we're only humans. We make dirt occasionally. But go out of your way if your wife cleans the house. And, all right, Baruch Hashem. But here it's not the katlanit issue. The katlanit issue is a real issue, but that's the way it's handled. Okay, here it's a different issue. She has no children. She may be an island. She marries a second time, has no children. The third time, she should marry a man who has children. And we can understand that. And by the way, I know many cases as well of women who couldn't have children, island it in the full sense, and they married men with children and raised the children belev v'nefesh. I know one case where four daughters, each one turned out a gem, raised by someone, their mother died young, raised by someone who couldn't have children. But these four daughters, and the mother's aware of it, she's no youngster today, she has to be related to my wife. And she says, I succeeded. And I turned away, I cried, I didn't want her to see. She succeeded, absolutely. Now the Gemara says, what, and you see there's a question of the ketuvah involved, that the third husband already doesn't have to pay. You see the whole sugya doesn't have to give rid of her. Pay her. She's an islander. What happens if she marries again and the first two husbands don't have to give her a ketubah? Let me quote the Gemara correctly. Nisa l'rishon la'ila banim l'shnei la'ila banim l'shlishi lo kinase elo l'mi sheyesh lo banim. Nisa l'mi she'ein lo banim. But then the third time she goes out and he doesn't have to give her a ketubah. And the Gemara asks, wait a minute, what happens if she marries and she does have children? Can she then go back to the previous husband, Ibayalahu Nisait Leravi, and she does have children? Can she go back to the third guy and demand, give me a ketubah? It's your fault, not mine. I married a fourth time and I had children. And we tell this lady, Amrinim la, shetikatecha yafe miduberecha. Keep your mouth shut. Why? Because if you start boasting, I can have children, you're at fault. He can say, wait a minute, I divorced you because I thought you couldn't have children. Now that I know you can have children, I wouldn't have divorced you. The get is no good. People will start talking. I'm not pasking la halacha. Of course, could be we can make a case. The get was a get. But it's going to wind up in the Beitin in Chicago. And people will say, you had kids from the fourth, you were really married to the third, he really didn't want to divorce you, the kids are mamzerim. So the Gemara says, we tell her, keep silent. It's much more important than your gossip, than your words. What do we see from this Gemara? A woman can be cured. Infertility may be a machla, but it can be cured. Here's an open Gemara. And Rashi explains, Ilam hayiti yavdeyesha at bat panim lo geirashtich v'nimtza get batel l'mafreya. Wow. The get will be nullified retroactively. I know, I'm quoting now from the English commentary in the Schottenstein explanation of the Gemara, Yevamot Samachei Amid Aleph, the second page of explanation, footnote 12. If the divorce was premised on the assumption that she was barren and she now proves to be fertile, the divorce is invalid. If so, she is still married to the third husband, which causes her children from the present marriage to be illegitimate, to be mamzerim. But what do we see from this Gemara? That a woman can be healed. Even Ilanit, even someone who's an islander, who seemingly has disformities in her body, what they talk about today, lower lady, transgender, and all that goes with it, even someone like that can be totally, completely healed. And this is the Mishnah Halacha, that if she can be healed, then absolutely go for it. Don't be hesitant. This is part of life, part of being a woman, part of having children. And that's the Gemara in Yevamot. Okay. But there's more. And here we come to a topic that when you scratch the surface, takes you a whole year to deal with all the sources halachically and psychologically, hashkafically. I will lose a drop of it. This is I'm quoting now from Shulchan Aruch Yoredeya Siman Kuf Nun Dalid from the Tur. Sif Aleph. Kuf Nun Dalid. Sif Aleph. I'm quoting from the Tur. And here, Nachrit is about a midwife. Nachrit loti aled li Yisrael lit beinona veina mipnei shechashuda al shvichat damim. And this is the anti-Semitism. Lo aleinu, it hasn't left us. It's worse than ever today. It's the worst it's been since World War II. Hard to believe, but this is the reality. And you have a midwife who's not Jewish. She can kill you. So the halacha is you're not allowed to use a gentle midwife when there's no one else pregnant. I don't believe this applies to hospitals today. It may not apply in general if a person has a monotheistic belief. Like if you know what I'm referring to, the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, the Meiri, etc. But this is the halacha. And the halacha goes on, the Yisrael lo tanik leven goy afilu bischa, that a Jewish woman should not nurse a non-Jewish child even where she's paid. The lo tialeid lagoya, and she should not be a midwife for a goya b'chinam, abo b'scha mutar, b'medevarim amurim b'chol, avo b'shabbat asur afilu b'scha. And during the week, if you're paid, if it's your profession, you can be a midwife. On Shabbat, even where you're paid. And you cannot do it. You cannot be Mechalel Shabbat for a guy. Why are you allowed during the week? Why not allowed on Shabbat? What would be the halacha today? We're getting involved here with the whole question of, do you recall that Meretz, the left wing, years ago, their hatred for Judaism knows no boundary. And years ago, they told the story that a tourist had heart problems in Meir Shearim, and they refused to call the police on Shabbat. It's a guy. And you don't know what went on in this country. It was finally investigated. It turned out, lo dubim v'lo yah. It was absolutely not true. Halacha l'maisa, we would call the police on Shabbat. We would treat the Gentile. This goes back to Tshuvah of the Nod of Yehuda and what comes afterwards. And there's a concept, Mishum Eva. It goes back to the Gemara in Gittin. I don't want to quote the whole sugya, it would take a long time, but basically, in matters of Pikuach Nefesh, we do not differentiate between Jew and Gentile today. Mishum Eva. Because we don't want to create hatred. Simple English, we don't want to create anti-Semitism. Halacha l'maisa, if a non-Jew goes into labor on Shabbos, She will be delivered in every Israeli hospital from Shaare Tzedek to Laniado, which is Sansibar Kloisenberg Hasidic Hospital, to Mainei HaYeshuan B'nei Brak. We do not differentiate between Jew and non-Jew. Mishum Eva, this is the halacha. Now, what I'm going to tell you in parentheses, you should know that this topic comes up when you try to analyze what Judaism is about philosophically, hashkafically. What do you mean you differentiate, you don't differentiate? Why should there even be a question lachatchila? We're all human beings. We're all created in the image of God. We all have souls. How can we have any differentiation? All right. It could very well be that what it's referring to are idol worshippers. But people who believe in monotheism, there is no differentiation. Here the story is told, Mishum Eva, underline those two words. It goes back to the Gemara in Gittin that we bury non-Jewish dead, we give charity to non-Jews, we treat them exactly as Jews, Mishum Eva. Jerry Blitzstein, rabbi, doctor, professor, naming anything to you, Zeichet Tzadik Lezacha, Yaakov Blitzstein, Jerry Blitzstein, whatever name you know him by. He was my classmate. He's a BTA graduate, studied with the Rav. His grandfather was a big Rav in Brooklyn, the Mabit. That was his grandfather. Tamashev, Rav Tamashev, published many Sfarim. And he studied the Rav, little short guy in my Rakafer Aaron Chelik Dalet. I identify him in that famous picture. And Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, Aaron said about Jerry that he was the greatest Talmud the Rav ever had. He came in Aliyah, he went to Be'er Sheva, and somehow he didn't feel he was part of YU anymore. He was at Be'er Sheva University, his kids grew up there, and moved away from the YU orbit. When I mention his name, everyone looks at me, he published on the Rav, he's a genius. So Jerry Blitzstein is reported, they were talking with the Rav, and he asked the Rav, Rebbe, are you happy with that we only treat the Gentiles? It goes back to the Rav of Yehuda, Mishum Eva. And the Rav said, no, I'm not happy. Someone interrupted them, and the conversation never continued. But you see, what was underlying that conversation was every human being has unique dignity. Mishum Eva, maybe that applies to idol worshippers, but fine, upstanding Gentiles, why Mishum Eva? It's axiomatic to human existence. All right, but nevertheless, ask your father if he knows anything beyond what I told you.
My father said that Rabbi Yola Schwartz says in one of his farim that he thinks the concept of Mishum Eva is just how did he say? It's just a halachic maybe like booster, but for a general follow like that.
No, but why does he say it's a general?
Like he thinks that really, like even without Eva, there would really there's a like it's an somehow it's an expression of what really is a deeper
feeling,
yeah.
That the Mishum Eva means that we're all equal, we're all created in the image of God. Yeah, that's what I'd like to know. What the Rav meant on that, I'm not satisfied, but we have to, and then they were cut off. It's an interesting question, and I'll tell you, it leads even beyond that. I've often raised the question, who do you feel more comfortable with, a Jew who has no belief, no God. They're like modern Jew today, basically, lo aleinu. There's no God left, not in America, not in Europe. Or you're talking with a non-Jew who is a proper Catholic, a proper Protestant. Who do you feel more at home with? It's interesting. And it's not a blind... Yeah, obviously, you feel more at home with the Jew. You share the same destiny. But when you discuss religion and human being and man and his limitations, it's interesting. Who do you feel more at home with? And I'll tell you, see, the modern man has no concept of I cannot do this because God commanded me. The modern man, when he thinks I can do everything I want as long as I don't harm anyone. I don't break your windows. Nothing can, I can eat what I want, do what I want. Consenting adults, you've heard that expression? Consensual relationship. Consensual relationship. It's the end of the world. But this is a delicate question. Mishum Eva. I would think Mishum Eva, what you just said is what I have thought all along, that Mishum Eva is much, it doesn't just mean to avoid anti-Semitism and enmity. It means human dignity. I'm a human being, he's a human being. Now, there's more to this. And here, the Bedek HaBayit. Now let me explain to you what the Bedek HaBayit is. Bedek HaBayit is very important. But I've seen people make mistakes. They think the Bedek HaBayit is a new parish. It's not a new parish. It's the Beit Yosef. When he went through what he wrote a second time, he made addendums, additions. That's the Bedek HaBayit. It's like you see many times in Svarim, in back, they addendum. After I thought about this or I corresponded, I want to add to my viewpoint. That's what the Bedek HaBayit is in the Beis Yosef. So the Bedek HaBayit, and you'll see, it's worth looking up. It's right, I have a standard edition in front of me. Or it may be one. It's not an edited edition, but it's on page Shin Lamed Chet. It's right at the end of the Beit Yosef in big letters, Bedek HaBayit. And here he talks about Rofe Yisrael Mutal Asot Rofuah LeNachrit Kidei SheTitaber Mishum Eva. That a Jewish doctor, who's an expert, imagine a non-Jew comes into Shaarei Tzedek, goes to Machon Pua, and she wants to be able to have a child. And they're allowed to help her. It's like someone who helps them give birth. Mishum Eva, we have to treat them like Jews, and this sefer he's quoting, the king Heyyidah HaRambam Nachmanides, who was a doctor, she'asah hu atzmo kain, that the Rambam himself helped the non-Jewish woman give birth. Ach. You're sitting. Ve'ani matzati katuv shekatuv lo harav Rabbeinu Yona al-maisa zeh. Quote, tavol alecha bracha she'ata marbe zaro shel Amalek. That the Rabbeinu Yona wrote to the Ramban cynically, may you be blessed for increasing the children of Amalek. End quote. Now, I want you to know on that last part is the Ramban really do it? Did this really happen? Is the response of the Ran correct? You have no idea how much has been written. Variant readings. Did it happen? Does it exist? Reb Menashe Klein, who has a whole tshuva on this and checked out the sources, the manuscripts, he reached the conclusion that it did happen, that it does exist. The Ramban, the Ran rebuking him. But what do we see from here? We see black and white that if they're involved with this whole shaila, and look into the Mishnah Halacha there, and he quotes what I just quoted to you, the Bet Ekabayit, the Beis Yosef, but and Ra'iti, the Be'emet Shuvat HaRashba Machmat HaSensura, that the people who think that it never happened, it's because it was censored out. The censor, that's a terrible thing. From the censor's point of view, the Ramban helped, and the Rashba helped, and the Rashba writes about it, and the Ran had the chutzpah to say, Yomar Bezerah Shalamolek. They censored it. But this controversy really took place. And you see, this opens up. What do we do? Idol worshippers, regular non-Jews, non-Jews who don't believe, non-Jews who transgress Sheva Mitzvot B'nai Noach. All that we do with Africa, we send, I know I have a granddaughter-in-law right now, for 2 weeks she's on a whole mission with a whole group, most of them from everything kosher and Shabbos, the head doctor with the kippah, helping Africans, kids, operations, social work, allowed, nishumeva, human dignity, where do you draw the line? But from this Ramban and the whole story that we just quoted in the Beda Kabayat, what do you see? Absolutely can heal Ikur, infertility. If you can heal non-Jews, you can certainly heal Jews. And 100% you have to do what you can, help the woman, pay for the operation. This is an illness. Overcome it. Take whatever risk is involved, and he paskins la halacha, let the woman do the operation. Okay. We're not finished with the tshuva, but I want to end off here. I want to complete. I did a triology of how I got involved with the army, what we and what did I do before? I explained something else in my life. Anyone remember? If I don't remember, it seems I want to speak a second about Russia, right? I didn't talk about Russia. No, but I spoke. Didn't I speak to
the tapes?
Oh, the tapes. That's right. The tapes, and the army, and I want to say a few words about Russia. Okay, so to review, what did we do today? So Baruch Hashem, we're continuing with the tshuva of Reb Menashe Klein, and we're continuing with the tshuva on, let me just put my notes in order, and we're continuing with the tshuva on helping a woman who needs operations to become fertile. Can we do it? Should we do it? Should she do it? And then later we dealt slightly with orthodontia. At the end of the tshuva, we'll come back and deal with it in length next week. Now, to the people in front of me, the wonderful students who honor me with their presence. Are there any questions? Okay, if there are no questions, I want to end this part of the class and say thank you for joining with us until we meet again in health and happiness, das vidanya. Before I open it up to the world, I just want to say a few words just to set the record straight, because I see about the tapes, it's now common knowledge, and I'm being complimented that I kept the secret for 43 years, and I put it this way, when I heard the eulogies at the funeral, I was ready to faint that every last speaker put it out in the open, b'fnei am v'eva. And it was very important for me to set the story straight, particularly because it involves BMT and Grish Kollel. Regarding the army, it's a direct result of Grish, and it has great implications. Imagine they were married, could we be mother the Aguna? And you can take it from there. You can see Rav Abidan's tshuva. I can't do more than that. There is, to explain to you why I reached the decision, I reached them under a security clause for good reasons, believe me. I doubt if I'll be able to talk about it in my lifetime. My other involvement, which I was under a security clause, but the security clause is lifted, it was lifted 20 years ago, that too was a result of teaching. Over the years, I've taught in many different institutions, not just YU, Michlala, Gold, BMT, Midreshet Moriah. So, more or less, particularly from Michlalar, I gained a reputation among the Israeli students. This man, Baruch Hashem, knows how to teach. I've stopped teaching Michlalar in 85, and I still meet students' grandmothers many times over who tell me how much they enjoyed my classes, how it opened their eyes to different vistas, not just simply Chumash and Rashi. In 1980, May, I got a call, and I'm sitting in the house alone, a nervous wreck. My father was quite ill. He died a few months later. When I get a call, I remember every syllable. Harav Ratefet! This lady talking to me later becomes a very inspirational figure in my life. She was Romanian, and she worked for the Mossad. And she was a terrific lady, terrifically responsible and understanding. Rav Rakefet ata mukhan lekabel sicha b'li legalot et pratei ha-sicha. So I figured I'd just gotten a call from a student, and I swore I would never reveal the details of the conversation. And she had been my student. She was up in Tzvat. And I can't go into details. I can't even mouth it. But she was involved in a semi-adulterous relationship. I say semi because the guy was, he was a makubal, and he knew what he was doing. So if it would come to a divorce, she could claim, I never did this. My husband doesn't have to divorce me. So I told her off, and I told her, look, I can only follow the halacha. I'm not a Catholic priest who can tell you to say a few Hail Marys and that's it. You have to totally stop the relationship and pray to the Ribbono Shel Olam to forgive you. I figured it's a similar call. So I said the Bakasha, and she puts on a man that in my life I respect second only to the Rav, Aryeh Crow, Zeichet Tzadok Levracha. And Aryeh Crow gets on, Harav Rakefet, Anachni Yodim Shatay Yodei Elk Lelameid Gemara, Atav Mukhan Lelameid Gemara B'Moskova. And my wife had kept the needle in me because I had two students who went to Russia. Part of this whole operation of sending people who had passports that Russia would accept. And these two students, before they went, came to visit us in Israel, left all their, they went from here, came back to here. And they left all their personal matters in their last will and testament. They wouldn't marry. And they didn't expect to come back in one piece. And they left it all with my wife and myself. So Marco would always say, oh, you wouldn't have the guts to go to Russia if they asked you. And now I get this call, and oh boy, I said, okay, me tikach, will you take? Ishti. And then I started shaking. Aryeh Crow says, and what about your three daughters? And he lists their names and their age. Who will take care of them? Wow. So I told him my eldest daughter was already a teenager and Malkin's brother and sister-in-law live across the street. So Aryeh set up a meeting and it was a very difficult meeting. It gave us an address in the Kiryat, in the Yerushalayim, where the government buildings are. It was in the Mishrat HaKlitar, in an office, till we found it. It wasn't easy. I later learned he did that purposely to see if we could find something that's difficult, because in Russia, there's no map in English that will give you all the streets at that time. The closest you came to it was a German map, and more than that, nothing is marked clearly. It's just unbelievable. No names, just numbers. Everyone is a number. And that's the way our relationship began. We later learned that the Aryeh Crow headed up a division in a branch of the Mossad that dealt exclusively and entirely with Russian Jewry. Aryeh Crow himself came in Aliyah in the mid-30s. His father was a sheikher. His uncle was a Rosh Yeshiva in Slabatka. His mother and Aryeh and perhaps other siblings got out alone from communist Russia. Aryeh's father joined them about 2 years later. Aryeh became a teenager, grew up B'nai Akiva, and was a real B'nai Akivanik, one of the founders of Kibbutz Sad. At the end of 25 years in Kibbutz Sad, he already was the Menachel Klali, the Mankal, executive director. He was now entitled to a trip abroad. And he turned to the kibbutz people, the Board of Trustees, 1965. Can I visit Russia? I have two sisters who survived the Holocaust. I'd like to see them again. Kibbutz voted, absolutely. An Israeli passport could visit Russia. Aryeh went to Russia. And I write about this in Washington. I came to know Aryeh intimately. Yehuda, you want to know how well I knew Aryeh? When he retired from the Mossad, I was the only non-Mossad employer, who spoke. You understand? Came to know Aryeh intimately. He goes to Russia. It's like Yomo returning to Russia. His first day there, his Russian was not perfect. He was raised from the time he came here, 11, 12 years old, in Hebrew. Everything he went to school here was in Hebrew. It's like Yomo, his English is better than mine. Occasionally he'll stumble for a word in Russian. And by the next day, his Russian was perfect. Back to him, back to Moscow, back to where he grew up. His sisters came to visit him. But more than that, his sisters pleaded, any trinket you have, a mug and dove, am Yisrael Chai. the Jews want. Wherever he traveled, people ran after him. Do you have a talis? Do you have tefillin? Do you have a siddur? He couldn't believe how the Jews, after so many years of communism, no yeshiva, no shuls, retained Jewish feeling. Came back to Israel, and his kibbutz, as you know, Kibbutz Sadis in the news, it's on the Gaza border. It's not far, it's a little further south than Steh Boker, where Ben-Gurion retired. He went to see Ben-Gurion, and he pleaded with Ben-Gurion. He didn't know that the Mossad had a branch dealing with Russian Jews since 1952. It was called Lishkat HaKesher or Nativ, the path, Nativ. Russia, Israel, Israel, Russia. Lishkat HaKesher. And he didn't know about it. There was a big secret. Goes to Ben-Gurion and tells Ben-Gurion what he saw in Russia. We have to do something. We have to help. And Ben-Gurion says to him, Aye, ani chashavti she'ata bachur im seichel. You have sense, common sense. You think, ata choshev she'anachnu yuchum la'atzot mashu, im ha'imperia communistit? And he sent them back to Sa'ad. 2 weeks later, there was one phone in Sa'ad at the time, in the Maskirut office. Someone comes knocking on the door, 11 o'clock at night. Aye, yesh lecha tzilzul, omrim shezeh chashuv. And Aye Kroll puts on his bathrobe, rushes to answer, and it's the branch of the Mossad calling. Aye Kroll, yesh lecha chaver tov b'shtei boker. He told us about you, Ben-Gurion. We want to meet you. Shaul Avigur was on the phone. Aye was shaking. You know who Shaul Avigur was? He was one of the founders of the Mossad. He was the head of Aliyah Bet during World War II. It's a legendary figure. He meets with Aye. From that day on, Aye Kroll worked for Nativ, the Mossad, the Lishkat HaKesher, call it what you wish. Aryeh Kroll discovered something that plays a big role afterwards. What did they discover? The war broke out, 67. Russia broke war relations with Israel. Your Israeli passport was worthless. You couldn't get into Russia with an Israeli passport. But wait a minute. They're Jews like Rakefet. Who is Rakefet? Chatzi Yevet, Chatzi Ben Chorin. He's half and half. An American passport, an Israeli passport. He can get all excited about the IDF, and Lahavdil, Mayelef Havdalas, he can get all excited about Joe DiMaggio. Ah, send him to Russia. IA developed a system where he could send Israelis who had dual identity to Russia. He sent people from all over the world, but the main part was the Israelis. And lo and behold, until today, I don't know who recommended me to Aryeh Kroll. They would never tell me, but for the next 10 years, my wife and I lived a dual existence. Normal life and secret life. And I hope we did a little good in communist Russia. Sitting in this chair a few weeks ago, months ago already, was Aryeh Katzin, had a Aryeh Katzin rage. You know what rage is? Russian-American Jewish experience. It now has added rise. Russian-Israeli Zionist experience. I was honored by Lakewood. A whole group is sitting there. They're looking at me, a clean-shaven Oisvav. How? Why is Aaron Cutler honoring this Kefir? And we're talking, I'm answering questions, and I mentioned IAA Katzin. Aaron Cutler. Katzin, I know him. I'm like, Katzin, let's call him. And they call. His phone number, it's a magic world. Where do you think he is? Yomo, in Kiev, where you come from, with a whole group of American Russian kids of Russian origins. Then from there, they're going to go to the Kotel after seeing where their parents came from. And Aaron Cutler insists, I'm being clear, Aaron Cutler, I trust you know who I'm talking about, the former executive director of Lakewood, the man who built Lakewood into the richest yeshiva in the world today. They laugh at YU and ask to go pleading for crumbs. And they call Ari Katzin, and Aaron Katzin says to him, Rabbi Katzin, I have someone who told me about you. And Katzin here goes hysterical. And everyone's listening as I'm speaking. Rabbi Kefet, Malka, they turned me into a Jew. They taught me, Rabbi Kefet taught me the first Gemara I ever learned. And he was, and these people there, he fell out. Wow. Wow. Talmud of Rav Soloveitchik. Okay. Gentlemen, the rest is history. Open up what I was privileged to publish in Washington. Have you read Washington?
Well, I haven't been able to find a copy yet.
Yeah, you don't know how to breathe air until you read and study Washington. OU, Amazon, everyone comes up with a copy, and you haven't been able to find a copy. Ribbono shel Olam, I never knew it was outlawed in Chicago. And Rakafet Aaron, Chelek Dalet. A lot of info. Chelek Dalet, I will give you, young men, if you wish to have it, in my office right after class. Yomo, please open up to the world and see if there are any questions from the erudite audience sitting in front of me.
Recording stopped.
Okay, you're turning it off. Okay, it's unmuted. Everyone's unmuted. Okay. Vic, can you hear me? Yeah? I can't hear him, one second.
Yes, sir.
Okay, good. I want you to know, I finished the second chapter last night. Okay, you know what I'm talking about, right? I'm the Shmuel Belkin.
And oh, okay.
I Xeroxed today. I have to see that it's good. Will you be here tomorrow?
I'm going to try my best. Okay. It's going to be hard to promise that.
Okay.
My sister-in-law are coming in tonight, so I have to see what...
Well, which sister? The one from Flatbush? The one I know?
Yeah.
Bring them to class tomorrow. What's the Shaila? Okay.
Yes. Yeah, so
if they're not jet-lagged, wait a minute, they'll be jet-lagged. Okay. I'll tell you why. I emailed...
My going to learn with his grandson. At Mears.
Ah, that's more important than my Narishkeit. Okay.
No, it's not that.
You know, he has to learn with his grandson and me, 100%. I emailed Evelyn, and I have a feeling she lives within walking distance of where you live. So it's
okay.
I solved the problem of getting the manuscript to Evelyn. Okay, right, anyway.
And we can transport it next week.
Don't, if you can't come tomorrow, next week is another week. Baruch Hashem, God should keep us.
I'm going to try my best, Rebbe. You know that.
I know that, but I don't want you to go crazy with the buses and but welcome your brother-in-law and sister. Baruch Hashem, happy to hear they're here again. Are there any questions from the erudite audience around the world?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Jack.
When you and Malka entered the Soviet Union, where did your children think you were?
No. So I'll tell you. Our children knew where we were. We were allowed to tell my sister and brother-in-law, and we were allowed to tell the Holzes in New York who arranged the cover. We coming as if from Queens. They actually sent us food, which was very helpful. And We were allowed to tell one other person who you know, Ilana Gruda. Right? Ilana Fuchs Gruda. Why we were allowed to tell her? Because I told Aryeh she had just come out of Russia and she could brief me on the telephone, the buses, on the money, and he gave me permission and she kept the secret. They all kept the secret, actually, 100%. How is Ilana today? Are you still in touch with her?
I haven't been in touch with her in quite a while.
Quite a while. Life moves on, but so many are not with us. But Kachasa, when you reach, you know my thought, when you reach Kohelet, you deal with Shirim, Mishle, Kohelet, and a good Rebbe has to live all three together. Yeah, so that's the answer. Okay? But you're absolutely right. Everyone thought I was in Miluim. That was the greatness of the army that they covered for me. And then when I came back...
Malka disappeared.
Excuse me? Malka wasn't teaching. It wasn't any big deal. For children, no. We didn't have... Remember, no one was married. It's not today that we can have endless calls from grandchildren and great-grandchildren. No, the great, and the army, that was fabulous. I'm in the army in the Miluim. When I got back, the government gave me an official letter that I was on a secret mission, and I didn't lose a penny of salary. You follow? In other words, the government didn't have to pay me my regular teaching job paid. What the government did do, there was money every day. There was a certain amount of money they gave you. You should buy food, whatever. It covered all expenses and travel and even the shirut to the airport and everything was covered by the government. And they gave me, like in the middle trip, when Julie Edelstein was in jail, they gave me like $2,000-$3,000. I mean, I was a pauper then. We lived like church mouse. I had two jobs. On the books, I've told you more than once, even if I wanted to go black money, the whole country was black until the Likud more or less straightened out the country. They're still striving to get rid of all the black money. But one check was the government and one check was Jewish agency. So suddenly I have thousands of dollars. But what I had to do with the money, I met with Julie Edelstein's wife, late wife today, Zichrono Levracha, Tanya, and I used the money to buy special liquor in the Beriaska, the foreign currency shop, which was used to bribe the jailers to let in the kosher food, the cheese, the meat that was given to me in London by the branch of the Mossad there, to bring to Yuli Edelstein. Gentlemen, you have no idea. Mi ka'amcha Yisrael goyet ad ba'aretz. You follow? Don't forget that. And I hope you don't intend to remain in Chicago and worship idols. That's an open Gemara. Ki'ilu aved aved azara. Here we need you to become total, complete Jews and to vote in the election. Vote, whatever you want, but only a party that's committed to Torah. You follow?
Another question?
Okay. What'd you say?
I don't know if you can answer this. Do you really think the KGB didn't know who you were and
I write about that in Washington, Jack. You have to know Washington by heart.
I read the book twice, I don't remember.
They absolutely knew who we were. But there's one problem they had. If they threw out some of our people, some of the people I sent were thrown out on Shabbos. They always threw out on Shabbos. I can't go into detail now with the Rav and everything. But let me explain to you. Every time they threw out an American, the State Department kept count. Generally, when it hit 10 Americans thrown out, the State Department threw out 10 Russians visiting in America. Now, every Russian in America, even if he wasn't a real spy, was a little spy. He'd bring home a Sears Roebuck catalog. That alone was valuable for the Russians. So they were limited in what they could do. Putin, throughout, I sent Mike Stricker, Michael Schweiger, Mayor Schweiger, I should say, two terrific, Myron, an English mayor, and as a Jew, in America I called the mayor, here I called the Myron. Do you understand why, Yosef Chaim? The Ramban, HaChodesh HaZeh Lechem Rosh Chodeshim. If you don't know that Ramban, look it up and know it by heart. In America, he's mayor. Here, he's Myron. So Putin threw them out. He was the head of the KGB in Leningrad. He threw them out on Shabbos. Where, Putin's face with all his love for Jews. Communism. And they couldn't throw you out wholesale because of the State Department. David Applebaum, Hashem Yikom Damo, he was in Odessa. In Odessa, the KGB reigned because there was no American embassy anywhere near there. They put him in jail, what went on. Read about it in Washington, or in Rakafat Aaron Chelik Dalit. But they never threw him out. They were limited. So that's the answer to your question. Also, it was important for them to see who you went to visit. Why? By seeing who you went to visit, they knew who the activists were. Now, that was a double-edged sword. On one hand, you'd say, if they saw you're an activist, you're in trouble. On the other hand, the more you were known in the Western world, it gave you some shield of protection with the KGB. Russia was bankrupt. They needed foreign currency. There was a limit how much they would rock the boat. Okay, have I answered? And that, I don't think there's any other answer. I think that these factors are the true answer. But the count, once it hit 10, wow. Are there any more questions? Okay, I want to thank everyone who joined me from Hanai and Hara across the world. And tomorrow at 9 a.m. we pick up I wouldn't miss tomorrow's Shia, even if you're offered $1 billion like that lottery that just won in New York, not in America, I should say, over $1 billion. Guy, I'll tell you, that guy, I wouldn't sell him life insurance. When you go from being a normal American citizen to having over $1 billion at your command, that may be a klala, not a bracha. I would not sell them life insurance. Boy, what are you going to do with it? How are you going to spend it? How are you going to divide it? Who's going to help you? Who's going to give you advice? Who's going to be your counselor? Who's going to be your lawyer? How many charities, when they find out if this guy is Jewish, oh my gosh, 1,000 good charities will run after him. I don't envy him. But nevertheless, if anyone offers you $1 billion, tell them you got a shiur tomorrow morning at 9. We need to get it. Health and happiness. Das v'danya. Thank you. You fellas don't realize how happy I am. You wonder why. Viruses are going around here. I haven't really felt perfect. Even last week when I gave the shiur on Monday, and then the Brit was delayed until we knew. And when you're my age, any tension, it upsets you. And over Shabbos, and my wife was worried, I'm coughing, and if you had any seichel, you'd take off a few weeks and just rest. And Baruch Hashem, Elliot, I'm younger than you right now. Gentlemen, until we meet again in health and happiness, that's the Daniel.